Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Tuesday, May the 15th. Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
With me, Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. In today's program, Burundi gears up for a constitutional referendum on Thursday amid accusations by the opposition.
Often people were kept from attending rallies. We also noticed wrongdoings by police officers.
And want to buy a Bible or Quran in Uganda? Be prepared to pay some extra tax.
Bible should be taxed because Bible Society is selling these Bibles and we don't know where the money goes.
And on the world stage, tensions in Israel and Gaza continue after the U.S. moved its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Stick around as we talk to our correspondent in the Holy City.
But first, let's hear what other stories are making headlines around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. The United Nations Human Rights Office says Israel has repeatedly violated international norms by using deadly live fire to repel protesters from its border with Gaza. Spokesman Rupert Colville reiterated calls for an independent investigation into Israel's use of lethal force in border demonstrations in recent weeks, including the deadliest incident on Monday when dozens were killed. South Africa was the first African country to take drastic action to show its displeasure. More from DW's Johannesburg correspondent Thuso Kumalo.
South Africa has recalled its ambassador to Israel until further notice after the Israel soldiers shot and killed at least 58 Palestinian protesters and left thousands wounded. The Department of International Relations explained that the ambassador has been recalled to brief the government on the killings so that it could take informed action. South Africa condemned in the strongest terms possible what it called Israel's violent act of aggression against peaceful Palestinian protesters and its current occupation of Gaza Strip.
In Australia, a number of African athletes who went missing from the Commonwealth Games last month have resurfaced. They were seeking advice in gaining asylum in the country, according to refugee advocates. More than a dozen competitors from Rwanda, Uganda, Sierra Leone and Cameroon were suspected of fleeing during the Games. Australian Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton warned that anyone who overstayed would be forcibly removed from the country. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. The foreign ministers of Germany, France and the United Kingdom met on Tuesday to seek a way to keep Iran in an international nuclear agreement after President Donald Trump pulled the U.S. out of the pact. On Sunday, Iran set a 60-day deadline for the European Union to come up with a solution. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani called on the EU to stand against what he called the United States' illegal and illogical actions, adding that Tehran would stay in the accord only if it fully benefits from it. Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday inaugurated a 19-kilometer bridge linking southern Russia and the Crimean Peninsula. Putin annexed Crimea from Ukraine in March 2014. The European Union and the United States reacted by hitting Russia with sanctions. And in sports news, there were a couple of surprises as the coach of Germany's national football team, Joachim Löw, unveiled his 27-man provisional squad for the World Cup in June in Russia. Löw named Bayern Munich's Manuel Neuer as one of four goalkeepers despite his long injury.
It's virtually impossible to go into a World Cup after such a long time not playing. Manuel Neuer knows that. Now that he's healthy and training, we want to see how his foot reacts to it. We'll talk about it openly at the end of May or start of June.
The selection of uncapped Freiburg striker Niels Pedersen is seen by experts to be the biggest surprise. Löw did not nominate Borussia Dortmund midfielder Mario Götze, scorer of the winning goal in the 2014 World Cup final against Argentina. For more news and information, download the DW app from the Google Play Store or from iTunes. I'm Christina Kripal.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet. Remember, you can also listen to the program on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And not just that, you can also share your opinion on the different stories that we are covering.
And let's get down to business. Burundi will hold a referendum on Thursday to change the constitution to allow President Pierre Nkurunziza contest for presidency again. Should it go in his favor, he could stay in power until 2034. Nkurunziza has been president since 2005.
Now he is the latest African leader to try and extend his mandate after Uganda and Rwanda scrapped presidential term limits and Congo's president ignored the end of his term. The opposition has called for people to vote no or boycott the referendum. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nyerora reports that tension is high.
The campaigns are over. Burundians will now have to decide the future of their political destiny. But the opposition coalition, known as Amizero y'Abarundi, sees no hope in changing President Pierre Nkurunziza's will. Here is Agathon Rwasa, chairman of the Burundians' Hope opposition coalition.
Often people were kept from attending rallies. Transportation companies were intimidated and feared to rent their cars to the Amizero y'Abarundi. We also noticed wrongdoings by police officers and the administration that seemed to be at the service of the ruling party instead of the citizens.
The youth wing of the ruling party, popularly known as Imbonerakure, have often committed human rights violations on opposition supporters. The UPRONA party, an ally of the ruling CNDD-FDD party, denies these allegations.
At the UPRONA, we are glad that the campaign has been running well. We would like to inform you that until now, no problem has been faced by the UPRONA. Its members coming from the campaigns countrywide have not so far been ill-treated.
That was Olivier Nkurunziza, Secretary General and spokesperson of the UPRONA. As the date for the referendum draws closer, the media landscape has become even more volatile. Two international radio stations, BBC and Voice of America, were suspended on the 4th of May. They were accused of violating principles of balance of information and the rigorous verification of sources. Burundi Media Council Chairman Ramadan Karenga said talks are underway for the reopening of those radio stations.
We have already been approached by the local official newspaper Le Renouveau and international radio journalists. We welcome anyone who wants to talk to the CNC so that we can continue to promote freedom of expression within the media.
Several other media houses have also been warned against violating the Burundian press law.
Apollinaire Ninyerera in Bujumbura. We can only wish that the best happens in that country. And one Palestinian was killed by Israel fire as Palestinians rallied in Gaza on Tuesday for the funerals of scores of people killed on Monday during protests by Israeli troops when the U.S. embassy moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
At least 60 Palestinians died in the violence described as one of the worst since the 2014 Gaza war. Israel has defended its actions, saying it was acting in self-defense. DW correspondent Maya Shveda is in Jerusalem and she's been describing the mood to me in the city at the heart of the conflict.
So the mood in Jerusalem today has been much calmer. There hasn't been a lot that's been happening in the past couple of days in terms of actual protest. We've mostly been seeing that happening in the West Bank and, of course, in Gaza, where there were unfortunately those several dozen people killed. Today is, of course, also the start of Ramadan, and there's a real question as to whether there's going to be any protests after the funerals in Gaza have finished and before Ramadan starts. So sometime this afternoon, I think police are going to be on high alert.
And now, apart from the U.S. president, world leaders have condemned Israel's response and urged restraint. Do you see their appeals being taken into consideration by both sides of the conflict?
You have to understand, if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister right now, you feel pretty invincible. As not only did the U.S. move its embassy to Jerusalem yesterday, last week the U.S. also announced it was pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, which was signed in 2015. And this has been sort of a pet project of Netanyahu for a couple of years now is to torpedo this deal, and that has basically just happened. So Netanyahu is feeling like he can do anything he wants, and so if he's going to want to, you know, increase Israeli presence in East Jerusalem, he's going to be able to do that. If he wants to start bombing more targets in Syria that belong to Iran, he's going to do that. So from the Israeli side, they really have no incentive to back down in any way right now. From the Palestinian side, they really don't have any bargaining chips right now. They wanted, you know, East Jerusalem as their capital, and the U.S. and Israel have taken that away from them now.
Maya Schwader in Jerusalem. And Ayeko, I'd like to acknowledge some of the people on our DW Africa Facebook page. Paulinus Emmanuel Chinuikwe Chukwonoso also says, very good. And another one, Uba Oha, also commenting and saying, that's good. I mean, they're on our page live commenting as we broadcast this show on air.
And we do encourage you also to join in, listen to the program from wherever you are and share your opinion on the different stories that we are covering. Back to Africa. Religious groups in Uganda are contesting a move by the government to introduce 18% on religious materials, including the Christian Bible and the Islamic Quran. This has again sent many Ugandans talking.
And this comes just as Ugandans are yet to come to terms with the president's announcement to introduce tax on social media. So those against the new tax say it will only lead to more criminal and immoral acts in the country. And this report now by Alex Jita is presented by Wanjiku Mwaura.
This is a church service in rural Mukono district in central Uganda. Here, only the preacher carries a Bible. Because some of the churchgoers cannot afford to buy one, now their chances to acquire one are diminishing because the government of Uganda has slapped a tax on Bibles and Korans, among other religious materials. Uganda is a deeply religious country, and the religious books are held so dearly. Till now, there was no tax on religious books to encourage people to buy them. Now the government wants to change this. Joshua Kitakule, secretary of the Interreligious Council, says it will be wrong to tax this material because most of them are donated.
Those materials don't attract any profit. They are usually donations. It will be erroneous to tax a donation of that nature that actually strengthens and builds the spiritual aspects of a human being.
And there are people who share this opinion.
Our motto says, for God and my country. If they put a taxation on this, it means other people will abandon religions and we see an increased cases of crimes in the country.
Bible should be taxed because Bible Society is selling these Bibles and we don't know where the money goes.
But the Secretary to the Treasury, Keith Muhakanizi, sees no problem in this.
The contradiction of the political systems in the countries, for example, where majority of people are still strong religious, here that you are taxing Bibles and Korans is like committing the worst crime. I think all of us should pay taxes without intimidation. Short of this is a joke.
Following diminishing donor funds, Uganda is trying to widen its revenue base, hence the widening tax avenues. Social media, scholastic materials, and agricultural inputs are among the products that now attract taxes. There has also been a huge increase in existing taxes, such as tax on importation of old cars, second-hand clothes, and mobile money transfers. The new taxes take effect from July, when the financial year starts.
Wanjiku Mwaura with a report written by Alex Jita in Kampala.
So are you heading to my country to buy some, get a Bible for yourself?
I'm not so sure it's a good idea to go to Uganda now and get a Bible. If you're going to tax me for that, I would rather get one right here where I am. Well, but there was somebody who said that they usually donated, so it doesn't make sense to tax something that has been donated. And there was some point there.
Yeah, well, it's not only Bibles that are going to be taxed that are donations. It's quite obvious that sometimes Ugandan Revenue Authority taxes other donations, not just Bibles. Yeah, but like the government says, they're trying to expand their tax avenue.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And the Bibles are just one.
And social
them.
Media as well. Yeah? So there are two avenues there. There's social media, which I think every young person is now using.
It's not just social media. It's not just that. As you heard in the report, even agricultural inputs. This is a little bit of a contradiction because the government has been trying to promote agriculture and waiving all taxes on imported products and so on. I mean, imported machines on agriculture to encourage people. And now, all of a sudden, it's a back turn. It's a U-turn. You have to now pay tax. So.
And on our page, just very quickly, there's a comment from George Achimbi who says, I'm watching from Washington, D.C. And Columbus also, who says, books must not be taxed to promote literacy. That is my view from Harare, Zimbabwe. Keep those comments coming and we'll read them whenever we can.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Still to come, cartoons made for African kids by Africans. In just a short while, you'll get to meet the people behind the African animation programs and the challenges they face. But now, in Kenya, women have taken to the streets in Nairobi to protest against the shaming of mothers who breastfeed in public. This follows an incident in which a 26-year-old mother was told to breastfeed her one-year-old daughter in a toilet.
Now, feeling humiliated, the young mother posted her experience on the Pregnant and Nursing Moms Kenya group on Facebook, and this is the group that organized today's march in solidarity with the shamed mother. DW's Rhoda Odhiambo witnessed the march and has been telling me how it all went.
Today was one of the days where women came out to tell the world, or rather the Kenyan society, that it is okay to breastfeed in public.
How massive was the demonstration?
I can't say they were very massive, but it was quite a number of women and even men who were supporting breastfeeding moms came out and actually moved from Freedom Corner to the restaurant where this woman was actually humiliated and told to go and breastfeed in a toilet.
So what's the general perception of breastfeeding in the Kenyan public?
People have varied opinions. Majority think that you actually have to do it in a private place. So this is actually even making it hard for women to breastfeed their babies. And it's not only in public places. It's even in offices whereby most companies do not have lactating rooms where mothers can actually go and express their milk. So you find that most of them have to find a convenient place, quote unquote. It can be a kitchen, it can be a boardroom, but somebody can just walk in. So those are the issues that surround, that actually women face who are at a stage where they are supposed to be breastfeeding their babies. And when it comes to the public, in public eye, it's actually a problem because some of them, when they see a mother breastfeeding their baby in public transport or just sitting in the park, they'll say something like, why can't you just cover your baby? Why can't you just cover your breast? So the question then being, do you have a problem with my breast or do you have a problem with me breastfeeding my baby?
Now, the women actually marched not just to the restaurant in question, but also went to Parliament. Is this something that could attract political discourse?
Yes, it has. There's actually been a debate because every year during the first week of August is actually the World Breastfeeding Week. And what stakeholders in the health sector and the education sector, what they're actually calling for is for government to pass a bill which will force, rather, companies to have lactating rooms where mothers can be able to express their milk. And what they actually did when they went to Parliament is actually petition members of Parliament, and the bill was taken by Senator Martha Wangari and it was actually voiced by also another MP, and they're actually saying they're going to support these women.
I'm very happy to receive this petition on your behalf.
Thank you.
Can assure you we'll put the pressure that is required, even to the President, that we get the necessary law signed, because you know when the Parliament expires, kind of the bills die with our Parliament. Yes.
Now, one of the prayer of the victim is that she wanted the restaurant management to apologize. Has the restaurant come out and issued this apology publicly?
When the women marched from Freedom Corner to the restaurant, which is called Olive Restaurant, the restaurant owner actually apologized. But his apology, unfortunately, comes days after everyone was already angered by what happened.
Rhoda Odhiambo in Kenya.
Now, we did post that story on our Facebook page, and Ebot, who's in the UK, says that is terrible. As Africans, there's nothing unsocial about breastfeeding in public. Women should have the right to breastfeed wherever they feel comfortable. Nobody stops anyone from eating a sandwich in public. Why do they want to stop children from being fed in public?
That's a good observation.
Very good point there.
Okay, King Exodus from South Cameroon says breastfeeding in public is a fundamental right because it's urgent for the newborn babies.
And Andrew from Dar es Salaam says the perception of breastfeeding in my country, Tanzania, is good.
Well, Emmanuel Obona from Nigeria says a woman is free to breastfeed her baby anywhere. Interesting comments there. looks like everybody who is commenting on our page is in support
they
of
agree.
The women.
Yes, exactly. Yes. With the women who protested today in Nairobi.
Yes, of and course, like cause. You heard from Aroda there, even the men actually went to the street in support, in solidarity with the women over there. That I find very interesting and quite encouraging.
Right, so keep those comments coming and we'll read them and whenever we can.
Yes.
Africa on the move.
You may have heard of big name animation studios like DreamWorks, Disney, and Pixar. But have you ever heard of animation made in Africa?
A small animation studio in Burkina Faso is trying to put African cartoon movies on the map. Brampost Humours met the people behind the project. His report starts off with a bit of sound from Piwat, an animation film they created.
Pawite. Pawitrawo. Pawite.
Très tôt le matin, les enfants se lèvent à 5 heures du matin.
Very early, every morning at 5 o'clock, children get out of bed with only one goal, to switch on the television and watch cartoons. And everything these children see, sadly, comes from Japan, France or the United States.
That's Wilfried Paré, the coordinator of ABCA, the Burkina Faso Association of Cartoon Cinema. He and a few friends set up ABCA in 2009 with the aim of creating a film industry with an unmistakable signature, that of Burkina Faso, or Africa, if you like. Why?
We think it's our job to add products that answer to the demands that exist here in Africa, because we have beautiful stories to tell, beautiful landscapes, and a beautiful way of looking at the world.
For the last 8 years, Wilfried Paré and his friends have been trying to put animated films from Burkina Faso on the map. With little or no money and only piecemeal international backing, but with plenty of ideas. Olodrisa Kambu is a specialist in building animated designs.
Madame Pawit, you say qu'il y a l'architecture de Tiebele.
In one of our films, which is called Pawit, we deliberately feature a specific architectural style we call Jibalia. Even tourists come here to see it. And it's immediately clear that we're in Africa.
André Daniel Tapsoba is another specialist who, along with Olodrisa Kambu, has been training scores of young men and women in the fine art of creating cartoons.
On essaie souvent d'habiller notre personnage en habit traditionnel.
We dress our characters in traditional clothes, what we call Faso Damfani. It's another way in which we want to make sure that our cartoons look different from the rest and are distinguished.
The film Pawit, named after its main character, is a tale of village intrigue set in Burkina Faso's endless savanna. It is one of their better-known productions. Afro Games, a fast-moving film featuring traditional African sports, is another. Making a cartoon film is an extremely lengthy process involving dozens of people. They create the landscapes, the buildings, the music, the characters, their clothes. And then there are others who voice the film, and still others who make sure that the moving designs and the sound are synchronized. One full-length film can cost as much as 3 million euros to make, they tell me. That's more than the Ministry of Culture spends on film in an entire year. And so ABCA remains, for now, with little money but plenty of creativity, never short of ideas.
And that report was compiled by Bram Posthumous.
Never short of ideas. That's how he ends it. And that I find very interesting. It fits right well there, Africa on the move. The young guys down there are not sleeping.
No, they're not. They're doing great jobs. I mean, all this creativity and innovation, and they're getting there bit by bit.
Very, very inspiring indeed. I look forward to watching some of those cartoons.
Right. There's one comment here I'd like to read on the Ugandan story. Uganda now wants to tax Bibles and Korans. And yeah. Shabarang says, from Tanzania, says the government of Uganda is not doing well to introduce taxes on religious books. God does not like that.
Interesting. I hope that the revenue authority speaks the word of God. I don't know about that one, but it's a very interesting comment out there. Keep them coming. We shall certainly be happy to read them.
Focus Europe.
In many African countries, polygamy is a widely accepted cultural practice. Now, a similar practice, albeit in a smaller version, is taking place in Norway. A group founded a year and a half ago says monogamous relationships are a thing of the past. The group says the future belongs to polyamory, having an intimate relationship with more than one partner, but with the full consent of all involved.
And now they want acceptance and ultimately the possibility of marriage for those who love in groups of three or even more. Our reporter John Lawrenson went to Oslo to meet some of them.
So this is our apartment. We have my husband and mine's bedroom in there. It's
round Ida, Bjorn and Lars's place.
Okay. And then my boyfriend lives in here.
They have just had a baby.
Who loves whom in this relationship exactly, Bjorn?
Well, I love her. I think of her boyfriend as a really good friend, who I'm very comfortable with sharing father duties with. Among other things.
This is what's termed a V relationship. Other polys live in triads, where all three people love each other, or polypods made up of two couples.
When we first met, which is going on 13 years ago, I wasn't really aware of the idea that I might end up with more than one partner. But being everything for each other is pretty hard.
From the very start, we started talking about what is it okay that we do with other people. Can you hug somebody? Can you kiss somebody? And once you start that conversation, it's very easy to continue having that conversation.
In another house on the outskirts of Oslo, a dozen or so men and women move around the room touching each other's hands. One of a series of activities aimed at breaking down their Nordic reserve, which seems to be working quite well. The evening has been organised by Poly Norway, a poly rights movement with 100 or so active members. Its leader is Linn Merdal.
Marriage, as it is today, is for most of the world, one man, one woman. Some parts of the world also you can have the same sex marriages. But in my view, that is obsolete. Marriage, it's about love. And we should recognize the fact that some people love more than one. And I would love it if my husband also could marry his girlfriend and give her the same security as I have in my marriage with him.
Out on the streets of Oslo, I asked people if there should be legal recognition of polyamory.
People should do what they want to do, but I think in these kind of relationships with multiple partners, I think eventually someone will get hurt.
Isn't marriage the most intimate thing you can do between two people, not like four or five? That is just like a group. They're just demanding attention, I think.
I think the idea of just having one partner is good. People should do what they like, but at the same time, it's a bit weird.
That report was compiled by John Lawrenson.
Very, very interesting report there. And one wonders, because we've had polygamy in Africa for a long time. And the question is whether it's coming to Europe now.
Yes, and that's exactly what Basil Azefa asks. He says, a relationship with three or more partners acceptable? Is it acceptable now because it comes from Norway? We have polygamy in Cameroon, and the German government spends billions on projects to let the world know it's a human rights abuse. We have records of successful polygamous marriages. I hope that also records some success.
Polyamory, that is these relationships in Norway. All right, let's move on to another story. A third of Cameroon's athletes contingent disappeared after this year's Commonwealth Games in Australia and are seeking asylum in the country. Australia's Home Affairs Minister has threatened to deport them.
That's a story that we are covering on our social media platform. And you too can join the debate. But one quick one here. Somebody who does not leave us his name says it is not a good idea to deport them due to the ongoing military killings in the English-speaking parts of the region.
Thanks to all those contributions. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet. We'll be here same time tomorrow.
Bye from us.